This is a special presentation from Florida Public Radio and WLRN Public Media in Miami. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Today, a conversation with the three candidates running for the Democratic nomination to be Florida's next Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Protection. It is one of four statewide elected positions in state government. Trade and Florida's agricultural products, water quality throughout the Sunshine State, and concealed weapon permits are just some of the issues in this race. The candidates were interviewed by me and the editorial page editors of the Miami Herald, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. We began by asking each of the candidates to introduce themselves and explain why they're running to be the Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Protection in Florida.
Jeffrey Porter, Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services. Tired of seeing agriculture die in South Florida. Born in Homestead, mayor of Homestead. It's Miami-Dade County is the second largest producer of ag products in the state behind Palm Beach. Over the years that I've been, involved, agriculture has really been under pressure and is literally dying in South Florida. And, with being involved in politics, being elected for 15 years, I felt like it was the time to move into something else where I could help the community in a larger scale. And it's almost criminal what I've seen happen to ag. So and obviously the consumer services aspect of it as well. We've got a lot of older population that just get taken advantage of, and being number one in fraud is really not something we should wear proudly. And I felt like it was an opportunity for me to do have a larger reach.
I'm Roy David Walker, scientist running for Commissioner of Agriculture. I decided to run for Commissioner of Agriculture because as an environmental biologist working for the state of Florida and U.S. government, politics got in the way of my research. When I was working with the state of Florida, I was working with Florida Fish and Wildlife as well as volunteering with the Environmental Department Agency. And as I traveled the state and talked about different issues, I wasn't allowed to use the word climate change. And that's when I decided to become more active in politics and to make awareness of our agriculture industry when it comes to conservation, when it comes to our water, which is our livelihood. And right now we're seeing the effects of runoff and special interests around Okeechobee and the Orlando area as well. So I'm looking to use my science background to grow the agriculture industry, to protect our environment, and to conserve our environment, especially our water, just as important, to protect our consumers. Yeah, we are number one in fraud, and number two at identity theft. And that's from the gas pump, that's from the do not call list, and these are systems that fall underneath the Commissioner of Agriculture, and nothing has been done over the years.
My name is Nikki Freed. I'm running for Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services. I'm running for this position because I have seen how Tallahassee is broken. And with my leadership skills and my knowledge of how the state works and things that I've been working for, saw this as an opportunity to go up to Tallahassee, make a difference, bring agriculture into new light, into new face, into new technology, and going towards more expansion of medical marijuana as far as also industrial hemp. And saw it as a great combination of all the things I've ever cared about my entire life on the consumer services component, as well as agriculture, and putting my leadership skills to good use and hopefully making a change in Tallahassee.
Howard Goodman, editorial writer of the Palm Beach Post. What role would the agriculture commissioner play in medical marijuana and in implementing medical marijuana?
First off, already inside the Department of Agriculture, it oversees the pesticides, which is every single one of the growers has to deal with pesticides. It will oversee our food and safety qualities. As soon as the department puts out rules dealing with the edibles, it will oversee that process. It also has over $20 million worth of federal resources to go after illegal producers of medical marijuana in the state. I would probably imagine that our current commissioner doesn't even know that that exists. And then, also more importantly, you're member of the cabinet, which has an earshot to the governor. And I know I've spoken to every one of the governor candidates in the Democratic side talking about medical marijuana and what has happened in the process. And so I know that all of them will be looking to me for leadership as far as choosing new directors of the Office of Medical Marijuana Use and the policies, that there's no one in the state that knows kind of the inner workings of the current department, the regulations, and somebody like me. And so they are going to look to my leadership and my knowledge of the industry. And then, as we all know, We are seeing a huge uptick across the country and interest here in the state as we go into potential legalization. And so once we go into a legalization format, then it is just an agricultural crop. And there's going to be a movement to actually take Department of Medical Marijuana Use and move it into the Department of Agriculture, which means that the commissioner will have an opportunity to not only help develop the future legalization program, but the implementation of it. And you also have to deal with the industrial hemp aspect of it as well, which is also underneath the Department of Agriculture already.
For clarification, when you talk about legalization, do you mean recreational use?
It's adult use is what the
terminology. So recreational use by 18 years old or older?
Well, it's typically when we see legalization, we talk about adult use, which is typically 21 and up. And so it would be a legalization, but I have been a huge proponent that we keep the two programs separate. You have medical still being a robust program, as well as potential legalization and adult use. That way that the product, if it gets taxed, only taxes the legalization aspect of it and not the medical side for all the patients. And
so do you support that legalization for recreational use for 21 years old and older?
I have said that I would, yes, and that it's something that can create $20 to $30 billion of tax revenue to the state of Florida. That is to help with our education, our infrastructure, for affordable housing projects. And if we keep also a very robust medical program, not only are we not taxing those products, but we're also, which I've been a huge advocate of, is making sure that our healthcare providers are starting to cover this as part of the co-pays in their annuals. So that decreases individuals who are on opiates and other pharmaceutical drugs, and also will decrease the overall cost of healthcare.
Hi, I'm Rosemary O'Hara, the editorial page editor of the South Florida Sun Sentinel. You said that recreational marijuana for adults could create $20 to $30 billion in tax revenue for Florida. State budget is $86 billion. So you're saying we could have $30 billion a year
in recreational
marijuana?
Recreational and hemp. Yeah, it's a combination of the two, yes.
I'm Nancy Ancrum. I am the editorial page editor of the Miami Herald. Mr. Walker, would you address medical marijuana and versus recreational?
I'm 100% for medical marijuana as well as adult use, and as well as hemp. Now, currently it does fall underneath the Department of Health, and currently the standards that are currently in place, well, there aren't any. And that's unfortunate because people are relying on this for as medicine. And as a medicine, I believe that aspect should have a good relationship with the agriculture department. Now, speaking of hemp, I'm a big believer in hemp because I like to use the example of our citrus industry. Now, the citrus industry has declined dramatically under 7.5 years underneath the current administration. But with citrus greening in the last hurricane, the citrus greening has really hurt the industry. And the fact that the has been proven that this the citrus greening is now in our soil, and one way to actually clean the soil is working planted alongside hemp. We clean the soil, and in fact, if you remove the tree, put a new tree in, it's been proven that it may not come back from different studies around Europe. I'm fully favor on taxing the adult use aspect, but until that becomes legal, it does not fall underneath agriculture. Currently, it's underneath the Department of Health.
Mr. Porter?
Well, it's the legislature's responsibility to deal with the voter-approved medical marijuana process that's been, you know, that's what the voter asked for. They've been dragging their feet and administering administering medical marijuana out correctly. You know, in our city, we've had to deal with the regulatory aspect because the state oversees the growing aspect of the medical marijuana. It's very, very tightly done, and it's not like, you know, the common thought would be you got a 5-acre field, you go out and you plant 5 acres of marijuana and you harvest it. No, it's under very, very tight triple security cameras, much like you would see in a lab. So that's all driven by the state, not by the ag department. You know, I as far as it goes with recreational, you know, I oversee a police department, and you know that we've got to deal with some things first with the medical marijuana aspect of it before we start talking about dealing with recreational use. In my opinion. The issue of hemp has been brought up. We've talked about it, you know, with our ag ag groups in the south, south end of the state here. And, you know, there are so many benefits. Not only, I mean, it's in the construction field. It's used in construction. It's used in farm animal feed. It's got so many opportunities for markets that that could use the product. And as we look at our ag industry having to retool itself to basically, you know, as the temperature warms, you know, we call it however we're getting here, but it's warmer than it used to be. And so our seasons to be able to get ahead of the rest of the country are shortened. We don't, you know, now they're growing oranges in Georgia. You know, so the warming of the planet is affecting our ability to grow the certain crops that we are accustomed to growing. So,
Just for clarification, do you support the legalization of marijuana for recreational use among adults?
At this point, no.
Starting with Mr. Walker. Can you talk about what needs to be done to protect Florida's agricultural culture here?
Finding the right direction for the citrus is very, very important. Now, the ways to grow that would be, of course, for those who are currently own that the acreage, the groves that are currently abandoned. Now, we need programs at a state level to convert those and work with those landowners so they can still remain on that land and still own an income, whether it be switching to a new source of revenue, which could be possibly hemp, or even renewable energy programs, for that example, because renewable energy does fall underneath the employment of agriculture. So speaking of that, that could be solar. It could be hemp. It could be blueberries. Blueberries is something that's coming up over right now in our state of Florida. And it's really good. It would actually bring in a few billion dollars as well.
Well, the University of Florida at IFAS has spent about $100 million so far on doing type of research on the greening effects and how and different cures. And so I know that the citrus industry has, over the last few years, tried using some of these different types of procedures that they've learned from IFAS. And so what we thought was going to happen this year was going to be a growth in the citrus industry. And unfortunately, the hurricane came in and destroyed what they thought was going to be prosperous here. And so what we need to be doing is also encouraging not only to citrus, because citrus is one component of our agriculture community. We have local farmers all across the state who are suffering just as much, if not equally. And what's happened in the last 8 years is that there hasn't been as much support throughout the state to go and try to get some national dollars and bring it back. There's also a trust fund inside the Department of Agriculture for Innovation. And that is also not broadcasted, that there's an opportunity for different local growers to go after some of this innovation fund, come up with new ideas, new ways to deal with soil, new ways to deal with other mosquitoes and infrastructure and new technologies, and give them the resources to become innovative and to become look forward to different types of aspects. And also, we have to go up to D.C. And the reality is that the trade wars and tariffs and NAFTA is hurting our agriculture community. And without the proper leadership that our current leadership is supporting everything that's happening in D.C. And as somebody who would be representing the entire industry, I'd be going up to D.C. fighting all of these issues, bringing to light of how much it is hurting our state of Florida.
Mr. Porter.
Well, you know, obviously, you know, from the farmer's aspect, if they can't make a living, you know, their asset is their land. And so I think we've got to really work out a way where, and especially like I was talking earlier about the weather pattern has changed, where we used to have cold weather and that would give us a chance to get our products to the market first at a higher value. Since we don't have that cold weather advantage any longer, it's harder for us to compete. And I think that's in citrus. I think that's in all of our ag products across the state. So, you know, I think we need to look at it. If ag is truly as important to the state as everybody says it is, we need to really take a good hard look at carving out a way to make it survive. And maybe it's not allowing Mexico to import for 30 days or 60 days. Well, we can get our tomatoes out first, or, you know, give our farmers, you know, a competitive advantage through legislation statewide.
It sounds like you all have different positions on the tariffs and the trade war, that in your impression that NAFTA was bad for agriculture in Florida. Is that an accurate assessment of what I'm hearing here?
Let me just say this. NAFTA, portions of NAFTA have been beneficial. Mexico has not honored the spirit of NAFTA, and we have not enforced the no dumping aspect of NAFTA. We do export more than we used to through NAFTA, but the unfortunate side effect of what NAFTA did is it has put too much pressure. It's killed the tomato industry in South Florida. We're down to probably 3,000 acres from what was 30,000, and that 3 will be gone probably in 2 years.
I think it boils down to that our agriculture in the state of Florida, it's a national security issue. That is, if our agriculture department and our agriculture in the state of Florida, it's not, again, just citrus, it is not just our vegetables and our produce, it's also our dairy, it's also our cattle. And if we are not able to have a robust agriculture community here in the state of Florida, and that we are not becoming reliant on other countries bringing in our food products, and that becomes national security, that we are having to rely on other countries for some of our produce if we are not able to have our local farmers here in the state of Florida grow. I agree with Mayor Porter that NAFTA does need to be renegotiated, especially when it comes to the seasonal produce.
Mr. Walker.
At the end of the day, we need to protect our agriculture industry. It's a $120 billion industry. And right now, people are closing their gates. They're selling to the highest bidder for development, for shopping centers and parking lots.
You would be a member of the governor's cabinet. Mm-hmm. You would also make up the clemency board. Though Amendment 4 might make this issue moot for you, but can you tell us your stance on the restoration of felons' rights, Mr. Porter?
I certainly agree with rights restorations, because I mean, obviously, anybody can make a mistake, and if you pay your debt, you should be given your rights back, and
automatically.
Yeah. I mean, there's no if you've sentenced to a year, it's not a sentence for life, you know. So I think that certainly, I hope Amendment 4 passes, but as a clemency board member. Yeah, I would say you definitely want to give people their rights back and get them back into society as quick as possible.
The Amendment 4. Now, I really do hope it passes. I truly believe that when someone served their times and then they are released, they should have the rights reinstated right then.
As a past public defender, I saw firsthand the injustice again in the criminal justice system, and I have been talking about restoration of rights for years, and the fact that the Supreme Court has said that our process is unconstitutional, and yet our cabinet continuously is following appeals and going through the process. And the fact that CFO Petronas had questioned some of the individuals in front of them a couple weeks ago and started asking them questions that have absolutely nothing to do with their restoration of rights. It's deplorable that these are elected officials asking these types of questions. We spend over $400 million a year not restoring these individuals' rights. If you've served your time, then you automatically should be restored your rights. And the fact that if a criminal justice system has said you have served your time, you have been rehabilitated, then that is the will of the justice system.
What do you see your role as being, assuming you become a commissioner, in Florida's water issues?
I think that we're instrumental. I have three R's. First is regionalization, is the fact that our departments are not talking to each other. Your DEP, your Department of Agriculture, your water management districts, your local governments are not communicating. And that we need to start there. We need to start saying, you know, what are the best management programs? And things are different between the coastal communities and the central part of our state. We have different water flows, different areas that need different amounts, and stop these regional wars that are between as far as who can use the water. Then we start going towards the actual system in place. You know, we know that, you know, the next 20 years, our population is going to grow by at least 6 million people. And as we continue to have that, we're going to have to continue to draw out our water sources. And so we need to make sure that the infrastructure is also, up to speed. So a lot of our pipes have not been restored in decades. They're rotting away, can't actually uphold some of the flow of the waters, and are actually leaking chemicals into our water system. So we need to make sure that there is potentially, like they do on transportation projects, a fund that is put into place where local governments can take the money out as a loan and then put the money back in once the water projects are done. And the third is also reusable. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we only have a limited amount of water supply in the state of Florida. And as our population grows and as our agriculture department and community hopefully continues to grow, that we need to be able to come up with new ideas for recyclable water.
As commissioner, your job is to make sure that different industries is using the best management practices, which is voluntary, not mandatory, to make sure they're not polluting our waterway. But they need to be held accountable when they do pollute.
Everyone knows this. We have a wet season, we have a dry season. We have a storage problem as much as we have anything else, because we store the water in the lake to a point where we have to dump it. You got to go back to the beginning of the lake and create storage areas, wetland areas, like it used to be. Let that sheet flow of water slowly run into the lake. It'll be cleaner when it gets to the lake, and you do the same thing on the outflow.
On the consumer issue, why is the do not call list so difficult to enforce? And why do we still have people scamming, reading our credit cards at gas stations? Mr. Walker.
Yes, the do not call list. And it's a program that's regulating the consumers, not the corporations. Now, I believe that this program should be reversed and put the corporations on the list so that the department can hold them accountable. And by doing that, that means they will have to come to Florida and open up an office so that they can be held accountable. So that when it comes to the do not call list. Now, fraud, of course, has been number one within the current administration. And they do get this information mainly at the gas pumps. Now, technology has advanced over the years. It used to be when you insert your credit card, it was there at the reader. So you used to always jiggle before inserting your credit card to make sure there's no attachment. However, technology has advanced, and actually they're now putting devices inside the gas pumps. Mm-hmm. So it's so that they transfer the data remotely. Now, to fix that problem, one way to solve that is inserting the chip on your credit card. They do that in Europe and other places. When you insert that chip, that means your card has to be there, and then they won't collect that data. Now, also with the device inside the machine, now one way to do that is to make sure that the pump is actually secure. And that can be as simple as putting a security label on the side of that pump, a seal, so that the consumers can know if it's been opened, it would be cracked.
Mr. Porter?
Well, I think the technology is lacking. You know, there are security efforts there are security aspects that are being incorporated that are protecting the credit cards better than they are at the gas pump. They're still using the swipe process. The do not call. They're just not enforcing. I don't know what to do. I really don't know what to do.
It's about enforcement. This is bigger than just, you know, mechanics and technology. You know, down in South Florida, there is actually a cartel that is running the scams. And so a lot of this comes into the consumers. There is an entire legal department and investigation department inside of the Consumer Services Agency. And that's just not been used to come down and work with law enforcement and trying to break up the cartel ring that has been controlling South Florida on the fraud of the gas station pumps. So you start going after criminal activity and start kind of breaking that down at the gas station pumps. And the same thing with the do not call list. It's called enforcement. It's called getting in there and actually prosecuting and sending those individuals who are violating this over to the Attorney General for prosecution purposes. So this is a leadership issue, and that has just not been addressed and being proactive to fix this. It is not a simple fix, but it is something that needs to be a robust program in order to take these individuals down who are committing this fraud against the consumers.
You've been listening to the three Democrats running for their party's nomination to run for Florida Commissioner of Agriculture during the general election this fall. They were Nikki Fried, Jeffrey Porter, and Roy David Walker. The trio was speaking with WLRN Public Media in Miami and the editorial page editors of the Miami Herald, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. The agriculture commissioner job is one of four statewide elected positions in state government. The agency is responsible for, among other things, Florida's agricultural industry, consumer protection, and food safety. I'm Tom Hudson. This has been a production from WLRN Public Media in Miami and Florida Public Radio.